Where did retirement fit in the arc of your life? Where did retirement fit in the novel that each of us writes with our life?
We're here for the retirement party.
Follow the headless brakeman.
Tonight, we've all come to honor a close friend of ours.
Our guest is the recently retired co-creator of Philosophy Talk, John Perry.
Please don't make me retire. My job is the only thing that keeps me alive. I never married and my dog is dead.
I wasn't forced to retire.
Who gets to retire?
Is retirement just some evil scheme that capitalists invented to get rid of older, higher-paid workers?
I spent 40 years watching more talented, more gifted graduate students struggle to get any kind of employment. So I really felt it was time to move on.
What advice does John have for anyone thinking about retirement?
Turns out what I really like is what I like to do when I was 8 years old. Sit in a room and read and write.
The Philosophy of Retirement, coming up on Philosophy Talk.
Holding hands at midnight, 'neath the starry sky. Yes, nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try.
Is retirement the best thing that could ever happen to a person?
Or is it just a capitalist ploy to rotate more expensive experienced workers out of the labor force?
Is there a philosophical way to spend your retirement years?
This is Philosophy Talk, the program that questions everything.
Except your intelligence. I'm Deborah Satz.
I'm Josh Landy.
And I'm Ken Taylor. We're coming to you from the Campbell Recital Hall on the Stanford campus.
Our thinking originates a stone's throw away at Philosopher's Corner. That's where Ken and I teach philosophy.
And I co-direct the Philosophy and Literature Initiative.
Welcome, everyone, to Philosophy Talk. Now, today, we're philosophizing about retirement. And we wanted to get started by hearing how today's retirees are faring. And so we sent a perfect person, our roving philosophical reporter, Liza Veal, out to meet some of them in the wild. She files this report.
I met Daryl and his friend Gene at a donut shop. Daryl's actually not quite retired, but the question of whether he's saving enough to be able to retire is heavy on his mind.
That's a billion-dollar question. That is, you know, I don't know.
He's 62. He works at Enterprise Rent-A-Car during the day and UPS at night.
That's the first thing you should worry about as soon as you graduate from high school is retirement, especially if you're not born with a silver spoon in your mouth. Yeah, you know. I was not. I had the carpet spoon.
Gene, on the other hand, has been retired for 12 years. He was a municipal electrician, and he thanks his union for what he sees as a dignified life.
I was basically just very lucky.
Why?
Well, when I got out of the Army, I just kind of fell into this job at the City of Berkeley, you know. In the first union vote, I voted for the money rather than the benefits, you know, and the old-timers looked at me like, you fool, you know. Because you can't convince a 23-year-old he's ever going to retire, you know.
Superman, huh?
Daryl and Gene gave me a whole lecture about how people younger than they are don't know the importance of a job that you can retire on.
They're what I call wage slaves.
Nowadays, everybody want to be associated with a brand name. Well, these companies are not contributing to their behalf. They're burning you out. You know, you got to fend for yourself. What do they call that in Europe? You was a serf, you know. You're a serf.
Daryl is saving enough that he thinks he'll be okay, as long as he isn't hit with something catastrophic. But after talking to people, it seems like not planning for catastrophes is a common downfall.
I probably could have saved more. Everybody could.
Like Virgil Todd, who I met at a senior center.
I wasn't shooting for, you know, high on the hog. I, you know, sufficient is good enough.
He worked in parking enforcement at UC Berkeley. Virgil was a softie on the parking job. He says he gave more warnings than anyone else gave tickets. But he fondly remembers busting the dean of the ethics department for a fraudulent parking permit. When Virgil retired, he took out all his savings at once and invested it all.
I had, you know, pretty good money coming in from the investments until my daughter needed an operation. And I was the only one with money. So it was my turn. You know, now I'm considered poor. But poor is okay. You know, I got a lot of company.
Now he's 87. He comes to the senior center to make these beautiful ceramic beads. and get an affordable lunch.
They sort of raced, you know, an awful lot of older people had this race, trying to figure out how to keep the money, enough money to go on before they die, you know. And they actually kind of figure that maybe dying a little early is better than dying without no money, you know.
When Virgil says he's not alone in being poor, it's true. Like a lot of people around his age, he's living off Social Security, which for him is $1,200 a month. But the thing about Social Security is, when it was first designed,
it was not intended to be the only salary that somebody would have in their older age.
Blanca Castro is an advocate with the American Association of Retired Persons, or the AARP. And she says Social Security was supposed to be the safety net of last resort, not the whole country's sole retirement plan. Its funding has been cut over the decades, and meanwhile, more and more people have come to depend on it. A trend that's going to grow, because right now,
we know that majority are not saving for retirement. They are not saving for a number of reasons.
Number one reason is our jobs are no longer helping us. They're less likely to offer pensions or an employer-matched savings option. Number two is other costs like housing are just higher. Retirement is being treated more and more like the responsibility of the individual. Other countries have taken the opposite tack. In Australia, Japan, the UK, for example, the state, the employer, and the employee are all required to contribute to retirement funds. Here, we're on our own.
We're already seeing increased number of people who are unable to retire. They either own their house and they're scraping by, or they absolutely are going into poverty, and there definitely is an increase in older adults faced with homelessness, or they're living with family.
It's just the beginning of a tide of aging seniors that will depend on the rest of us for basic needs. Blanca Castro has dedicated her life to changing our country's approach to retirement. But for at least a few generations, it's already too late. For Philosophy Talk, I'm Liza Veal.
Thanks for that report, Liza. That was a powerful report, and you're an amazing storyteller, and I love having you on Philosophy Talk. I'm Ken Taylor, here with my colleagues Deborah Sass and Josh Landy at Campbell Recital Hall on the Stanford campus, and we're thinking about the philosophy of retirement.
We're also making an important transition for the program because our guest today is the co-creator and host emeritus of Philosophy Talk, John Perry. John recently retired after co-hosting the program with Ken for 13 years, and that was after retiring from teaching at Stanford and UCLA for 40 years.
Yeah, so Stanford, he retired from Philosophy Talk. He also retired from UC Riverside. This guy is multiply retired. But he's not just sitting around all day playing golf and doing some pruning. He's been writing papers, giving talks, all kinds of important stuff like that.
So John has spent his retirement from being a philosophy professor by hosting a philosophy radio show, teaching philosophy at a university, and writing philosophy papers. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, but, you know, by the same token, who better to ask about what retirement means for a well-lived life? Please welcome back to the Philosophy Talk stage, John Perry.
Welcome back, John.
To hear the rest of this program, head to philosophytalk.org. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for thinking.